Welcome in, Eagles fans, to another edition of Locked On Eagles. As always, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Louis DiBiase here joining you on this Thursday/Friday edition of the show. I'm recording at 11:30, so by the time I'm done, it'll be Friday morning. You'll probably be listening this Friday morning, maybe afternoon, at night. Again, not sure what your job situation is right now. Hope you guys are all doing okay still during this COVID-19 pandemic. But if you're sitting at home, again, anytime, that's the beauty of podcasting, though. This podcast will be up and available on any platform all throughout the day or on LockedOnEagles.com. So we're officially in the dead zone of the NFL offseason, and we're on episode 4 this week of the dead zone. Continuing, though, to take a look back at last week's 10-pick class for the Eagles in the 2020 NFL Draft. Yesterday, we had Drew Davison on. He's a TCU beat reporter, digging deep in on Jalen Reagor and what kind of player the Eagles are getting on and off the field out of TCU at 21st overall. A couple days ago, I reevaluated the Jalen Hurts pick. Still hate it, and to this day, I'm still on that train. And then on Monday, if you want to go back earlier this week, we really dug deep in on the theme of the Eagles 2020 NFL draft class, and we got really deep in on the day 3 haul. I think Howie Roseman killed it day 3. So again, all three of those podcasts available on any platform or on LockedOnEagles.com. As for today, I want to get into now players that were already on the Eagles roster based on what the Eagles did in the draft or didn't do, who came out as a winner, and who came out as a loser. So that's what we'll get into in segments 2 and 3. But today, Derek Gunn of NBC Philadelphia says it's only a matter of time before both sides get a deal done when we're talking about Philadelphia, the Eagles themselves, and Jason Peters. I guess the report is that Peters wants to come back, and it sounds like the Eagles want him back too. So I'm not surprised at all that Peters wants to come back to Philadelphia, where he has spent the last 11 years as a starting left tackle at a very, very high level. But for Philadelphia, I'm surprised. I'm a little concerned. I'm torn. I think that's the best way to put this, is I'm torn when it comes to what to do with Jason Peters and Andre Dillard at this left tackle position. Because originally, the organization wrote Peters that, remember that kind of a farewell message back in March on Twitter, where they released an official statement, you know, thanking Peters for everything he did. You know, it sounded like to me they were ready to rally around Andre Dillard as the, you know, new starting left tackle of the future. That's why you traded up for him in the 2019 NFL draft. It's why you signed Jason Peters only to a new 1-year contract. You know, for a year, Dillard would be his understudy, and then in year 2, you know, you move forward. Now, only a couple months later, it seems like they're very torn on what to do at left tackle, right now and down the road. Personally, for me, watching Andre Dillard in the limited action he had, but against the Vikings last year, the Cowboys, the Bills, the Bears, you know, in the middle of the season, when he was in for Jason Peters after an injury, I thought Dillard showed some real promise when he played last year. I thought he got better each game. I think the Vikings game was a bit of a rocky start. And of course, yeah, when he moved to right tackle against Seattle, like, huge concern how horrible he was there, if you want to talk about him ever moving to right tackle. But Lane Johnson just got a new fat contract, and he's still in his prime. Like, Lane Johnson's going to be your right tackle for a very long time. They're never going to – I remember early on in Lane Johnson's career, the talk was, you know, he'll eventually take over for Jason Peters at left tackle. Like, that wasn't the case. When you took Dillard, he was going to be your left tackle. So while it was concerning a little bit how bad Dillard was at right tackle, at left tackle last year, I thought he was pretty good. I thought overall each game his hand placement got better, his footwork got better, his timing. Overall, his, you know, his complete game, you could see the development happening before our eyes with Jeff Stoutland, you know, continuing to coach that guy up week in and week out. And I think Jason Peters is very open to coaching these players. You know, you saw how he helped Talapulivati Vaitai in 2017 start at left tackle when Peters, you know, blew out his Achilles. I remember being at the game against Washington on Monday night where he coached up Big V as he's getting carted off. I think it's why, you know, everybody in Philadelphia, including the organization, the players, coaches, fans, love JP so much. And it's why I'm torn on this, because again, I saw the promise with Dillard on the field at left tackle. And I think the organization, to a certain extent, clearly has enough belief in him because they let Jason Peters test the open market. They didn't just, I mean, right now they might re-sign him, but they didn't re-sign him, you know, when the open market began. You know, they could have brought him back, and instead they chose not to. So for me, that at least, because I know there's concerns right now about how they feel about Dillard. But they at least have some, you know, they're not all out on Andre Dillard already after just 1 year. And Jeff Stoutland, I guess, pounded the table for him, you know, during the draft and all year last year. But they clearly have way more concerns now than when they made that first original trade up to get Dillard out of Washington State in 2019. And rumors have it that he had multiple emotional episodes during his rookie season. Some think he's soft, I guess, inside the organization. And rumors are the Eagles dangled him in trades over the last few months. And I didn't really believe it, but the more, you know, each report came out, I'm starting to believe it more and more that they really don't know what they're going to do with him. Let me just read something here from Jimmy Kemsky, who said, Dillard struggled as a rookie on the field, both at left tackle and right tackle. Not sure how much I agree with that at left tackle. And his emotional episode during training camp wasn't the only such incident that occurred during the course of the 2019 season, according to a source. If the Eagles had concerns about Dillard's mentality to play in a city like Philadelphia, it would perhaps make sense to move him sooner rather than later and salvage a pick. Here's what Jeff McClain said about him on the Philadelphia Inquirer. Howie Roseman never met Andre Dillard face-to-face before he made the pick. A native of the state of Washington, Dillard never had been to Philadelphia. While he showed some promise in the four games he got to play as a rookie, Dillard struggled to adapt to the new environment and the NFL locker room. So they're talking about Dillard having emotional episodes last year, the organization maybe not believing that he has what it takes to be their future at left tackle, how it was really hard for him to adapt moving from Washington to Philadelphia. It was concerning, too, to hear that Roseman never met with him face-to-face. I mean, this year I could have understood, but last year, I mean, how you don't meet with your first-round pick that you trade up for. I mean, you made a huge investment in Andre Dillard. So it's a bad look. It really is. I mean, again, for me, I understand, first off, wanting to milk Jason Peters for everything he has. I mean, that guy still plays at an extremely high level outside of the penalties. If he can just get rid of the penalties, even at, what, 38 years old, I mean, JP is an above-average left tackle in the NFL. I'm surprised no other team showed, like, serious interest in him. I don't know if he was just Philadelphia Eagles or bust, but at the end of the season, when they lost to Seattle in the wild card, he said he would be willing to be a starter, you know, somewhere else. So, again, it has nothing to do with JP. You know, he's an icon, he's a legend, a leader, and a role model for players, you know, and this team. And the Eagles need that in 2020 after losing Malcolm Jenkins, after losing Nigel Bradham, potentially not having Jason Peters too. Like, that is a lot of leadership that the Eagles are losing in that locker room on both sides of the football. So I love Jason Peters. It never had anything to do with him. It just had to do with his age, the investment they made in Andre Dillard, money. It was just eventually, like, it was time. You had to make sure that you didn't go all in on Jason Peters so that when he retires, you don't have a backup plan. I was all in on Dillard last year. But, again, it's a bad look. But if there are second thoughts, you got to give it another year. I'm not saying they're all out on Dillard and they're not going to cut him. Maybe they would trade him. But, look, if this gives you another year to figure out what you think of him, rather than go all in right now, if you have second thoughts, do not put all your eggs in that basket. Don't do it. I mean, bring Jason Peters back. Do not mess around with Carson Wentz's blindside, because outside of quarterback, if you don't have that left tackle spot down, that can wreck your season. That can destroy your season. And I think the Eagles are still primed to be a top NFC team this year. I think they're still going to be one of the best teams in the NFL if they stay healthy. So I know it was a huge investment and it doesn't look good, but just for the sake of what you invested in Dillard, don't let that be the reason that you don't re-sign Jason Peters. And it looks like that's not going to impact it at all. Because, you know, some teams would be egotistical enough to really stand pat, and even if they didn't fully believe in him, say, you know, we did this, we're going to ride through this and save face by going all in with Dillard. I think, again, he showed things on the field. He showed promise. I think they're teeter-tottering with this as much as I am. But if you have second thoughts, and I guess they do, then bring back Jason Peters, and I think that's exactly what they're going to do. Louis DiBiase right here on Locked On Eagles. When we come back, what players are winners and what players are losers after the 2020, 10-player draft class for the Philadelphia Eagles after last week's NFL draft? We'll get into the winners coming up next right here on Locked On Eagles. All right, everybody, welcome back into Locked On Eagles. What players came out as winners on Philadelphia's roster after the 2020 NFL draft last week? I will start on defense at cornerback. Two specific players, Sidney Jones and Avante Maddox, came out as big winners. For me, I felt like a loser when the Eagles did not take Christian Fulton in the second round and instead took a backup quarterback. If you can't tell, I'm salty. I'm pretty salty still. But they, Sidney Jones and Avante Maddox, came out as winners in that regard. Because, yeah, of course, Darius Slay is CB1 next year. But you add Nickell Roby-Coleman inside. Avante Maddox at that point, like, Roby-Coleman's going to start. That leaves one spot potentially for Maddox and for Sidney Jones. If they would have took, like, Christian Fulton in the second round, yeah, maybe Maddox or Jones starts for a little bit, but eventually Fulton is going to take over. Again, when you take somebody 53rd overall, normally, if it's a good pick, they should be a starter at some point, sooner rather than later, at Howie Roseman. So the fact that they didn't do that or take a corner at all in this class bodes really well for Maddox and Jones. Again, the report was before the draft that Maddox had the inside track when it comes to starting on the outside opposite Slay. I still think that's the case. But for Jones, I mean, do not rule out Sidney Jones. Let's just go back. I know extremely inconsistent again in 2019. The soft tissue injuries continued to hamper this kid. Confidence was a problem. But confidence was not a problem. I mean, talk about a confidence booster. The final 4 weeks of the season, Sidney Jones saved their season, what, twice? Three times? He made huge plays in the fourth quarter of do-or-die football games against the New York Giants, that Monday night football game on third and long, one-on-one with Darius Slayton on an island. Darius Slayton was kicking their ass the whole game. Sidney Jones, first play of the game, on the field, Eli Manning clearly targets him, veteran move. Jones plays it perfectly, gets the inside track, swats the ball down, and the Eagles end up winning that football game. A couple weeks later against the Dallas Cowboys, Dak Prescott is driving down the field trying to get Dallas the win, which would have been the NFC East championship win. Sidney Jones comes in, one-on-one with Michael Gallup in the left corner of the end zone. Dak Prescott, of course, just like Eli, targets Sidney Jones. Jones plays it perfect, has the inside leverage, swats the ball down again. Two huge pass breakups. Week 17, dagger interception against Daniel Jones gets the Eagles into the playoffs. Jones made some huge plays. I mean, he was your closer, right? You want to see him do that for four quarters consistently week after week. But to see him step up in those huge moments, considering confidence issues was a huge part of the problem, don't count out Sidney Jones. I like Avante Maddox. I would love for him to get back to that 2018 form on the outside. But Maddox showed some inconsistencies in his own right, too. I know the team likes him better than Jones right now, but inside, outside, Maddox struggled last year a lot. So they both come out as winners, for sure, considering they didn't add anybody prominent at corner after Darius Slay and Nickell Roby-Coleman. But Sidney Jones is, look, I think Maddox is the top dog right now for that spot, but Jones is in this, people. Sidney Jones is in this, and I'm sure Gino will love to hear that when he's listening. Let's flip the script now. Let's go to running back. Two players that came out as winners as well on the roster already. Boston Scott and Corey Clement, who the Eagles actually just re-signed yesterday. And he's a winner because he wanted to be in Philadelphia, as he said to the media today. And he wouldn't have been if the Eagles took a running back in, let's say, round... I mean, there's reports maybe it would have been J.K. Dobbins in round two, which would have been nuts. But let's say even round four, five, six... if they take one, Corey Clement's not back, and he has no chance of playing, even if he does come back. Same thing with Boston Scott. I mean, let's say they do take J.K. Dobbins. I mean, Boston Scott is no longer RB2. It's going to be the Miles Sanders and J.K. Dobbins show. So the fact that they didn't take anybody there bodes really well for Boston Scott and the organization's confidence in him. I don't think he's going to be second on the team in carries next year. I think that could be Clement or another veteran they eventually do bring in. But he's going to be second in touches at running back. He is such an explosive weapon. I mean, the fact that this kid was just stashed away on their practice squad is incredible. While Wendell Smallwood... last year in 20, I mean, just let's look in 2018. I mean, look what Scott did for them last year. He could have been doing that for 2 years straight, and instead they're using Wendell Smallwood. So he comes out as a big winner. So does Corey Clement, since the Eagles did not take a running back. So with this one, I'm kind of making one player a winner and a loser based on what the Eagles did in the draft, and it's quarterback Carson Wentz. A loser for obvious reasons we'll get into in segment three, but Carson Wentz also came out as a winner after this draft class because finally Howie Roseman built around, I think, Wentz's strengths. When it comes to, you know, Roseman has always tried to surround Wentz with weapons, you know, in 2017, even 2016. I mean, the guy, we all thought, or at least, you know, I know I did. I don't want to speak for anybody else, but I remember a lot of people believed heading into year two that Doriel Green Beckham, he could turn into a star wide receiver. I remember that. He had that kind of upside. Did not work at all. But in 2017, you bring in Alshon Jeffrey. You bring in Torrey Smith. You make a second-round selection in Dallas Goedert and in Miles Sanders. You sign Mike Wallace. You trade a third-round pick for Golden Tate. This year, you bring back DeSean Jackson. The Eagles have always tried to surround Carson Wentz with weapons. While it hasn't always worked out, and it's been more of a flop than a success most of the time, they have tried. And they've also tried to, I think Wentz's strength, when it comes to receivers, is the fast guys that can create separation. You know, Wentz likes to throw with anticipation. He likes to lead a receiver. He likes to throw to a window. So that's why I think he works better with the burners and the pristine route runners, more so than like the Alshon Jeffrey types. And the Eagles have tried. They've tried with that type of player, with Torrey Smith, Mike Wallace, DeSean Jackson. Finally, though, they went more so with the youth kind of version of that player, bringing in Jalen Reagor in the first round. I think Wentz and Reagor is going to be an amazing connection, really, from day one. I think Reagor overall is exactly the kind of receiver that Wentz is going to thrive with. Then in the day three selections, you bring in John Hightower out of Boise State, another burner. You bring in Quez Watkins, 4.3 speed, the second fastest 40 time of any wide receiver prospect. You trade for Marquise Goodwin. You get DeSean Jackson back healthy. On top of that, you have two elite tight ends, Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert, and Miles Sanders and Boston Scott. Wentz has a ton of explosive playmakers now, where you watch his highlights, it's always him doing the work, right? How many times is it Wentz throws a nice, accurate 10-yard pass, and then the receiver does the rest and takes it to the house? Not very often. Most of the time, Wentz's highlights, like, he's doing most of the work, even with the pass. Like, the touchdown is more of a touchdown pass than a touchdown reception. Whereas this year, I think life is just going to be a whole lot easier for him. Knock on wood, all of these guys do stay healthy. But overall, based on the not only how many receivers Howie Roseman brought in, but the type, I think Wentz comes out as a winner in that regard. Our last winner here on the Eagles roster after the 2020 NFL draft, go back on the defensive side, edge rusher slash linebacker. The Eagles used him in a number of ways last year, not very often, but clearly there wasn't one defined role after trading a fourth-round pick for him. We'll call him a defensive end Jannard Avery. So I still don't know how Philadelphia really feels about him. Giving up a fourth-round pick says that they believe in him. They wanted to draft him before he went to Cleveland. I guess they've always wanted him. They actually tried trading for him the year before as well. So, like, he was on their radar. And then last year, though, they struggled to get him involved with the defense. Clearly, they didn't know how to best utilize his skill set. However, at the same time, you know, the organization did say, like, this was a trade more so for year two, right? Where this was something during the offseason, they would find the right role for Jannard Avery. If they would have took, because right now, obviously, like, Derek Barnett, Brandon Graham, they're your starting two defensive ends next year. Malik Jackson going to play on the edge a lot as well. And, of course, Josh Sweat. Kind of a mini breakout year in year two, could have an even bigger one this season. But if they would have drafted, let's say, like Daryl Taylor or Joshua Uche in the second round, at that point it's kind of like, okay, they're almost maybe bailing on the Avery project already. On top of the Sharif Miller project, why I'm saying only Avery here as opposed to Avery and Miller is because I have no idea what Sharif Miller is. At least Jannard Avery produced at a pretty solid level as a rookie with Cleveland. And then even last year, I mean, his first game, you know, against Chicago, bursting through the A-gap on a blitz, you know, he was lined up almost as like a Mike linebacker. He was used as almost like a blitzing linebacker on pass rushing situations. You know, he blew up the play and got to Mitchell Trubisky. So even last year in limited time, like, he did pop on the field at times for the Eagles. And the fact that they didn't take anybody is opening a window of opportunity. If they don't bring back, because two, also you had Vinnie Curry last year, defensive end, rotating in. This year, if you go in with just Barnett, Graham, and Josh Sweat, that fourth spot, it's way more likely going to be Jannard Avery than anybody else. And yeah, you still have Deshaun Hall still there, you know, on the roster, and you have Sharif Miller, who you spent a fourth-round pick on. You would hope that, you know, he takes some sort of step this year and shows some sort of progress, but I think Jannard Avery is the one to keep a close eye on, especially considering they didn't take an edge rusher until Casey Tuhill in the seventh round. I think he's a big winner after the draft. All right, let's hit another break right here on Locked On Eagles. When we come back, I have three losers for you. players that their stock is a little bit lower after the Eagles' draft selections in last week's NFL draft. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. All right, Eagles fans, we are wrapping up this now Friday edition of the show, kind of a Thursday/Friday edition, recorded at 11 o'clock and heading in here at midnight. So, losers of the draft. Winners were Sidney Jones and Avante Maddox, Boston Scott and Corey Clement, Carson Wentz and Jannard Avery. Losers? Carson Wentz also is a loser. Not that, again, Howie Roseman once again today talked about in an interview how they're married to Wentz, like this organization long-term is going to be built around Carson Wentz. I don't think there was ever a doubt about that, although clickbait artists will tell you otherwise. Now, whether it has to, the Jalen Hurts pick, of course, we're talking about, has to do with making sure that they have insurance in case Wentz gets hurt again. That's up for discussion, whether more so had to do with, you know, the Taysom Hill package, whether it had to do with, you know, using Hurts as a trade chip later down the road. That's all very realistic possibilities. However, the reason, and again, Wentz isn't a loser because, like, his job is up for grabs suddenly, and maybe in a year or two, Jalen Hurts takes over this football team. To me, Carson Wentz isn't going anywhere. But that's the problem, and maybe why he's a loser, because the national media doesn't care about that. A lot of the local media doesn't care about that. Twitter trolls don't care about that. And although players will tell you they don't listen to the outside noise, especially a guy like Carson Wentz, who loves to hunt and he's out in the wilderness, and I doubt he's on the internet very often, there's enough out there that can be a distraction. And especially, it's not just like right now First Take or Undisputed talking about could Jalen Hurts ever beat out Carson Wentz. Like, do the Eagles believe in him still long term? That's more of a distraction for me and a nuisance for me than Carson Wentz. But I don't know. Let's say he has a stretch next year, kind of like he did this year with the Patriots game and the Seahawks game, and he's really struggling. Now suddenly, because, again, not that I always want a good backup quarterback. The Eagles have relied on good backup quarterbacks, and they've gotten bailed out by them more than any team over the last 20 years. A.J. Feely, Kevin Cobb, Michael Vick, Jeff Garcia, Nick Foles. I mean, the list goes on and on. But again, a second-round pick comes with an expectation, and especially a guy like Jalen Hurts, who won at a very high level in college. It's kind of like, I'm not comparing him as a prospect to Tim Tebow, but kind of like that where he was a college football icon, or he was a very, maybe not an icon because he got beat out by Tua, but he was an extremely popular, well-known quarterback that won at Alabama and at Oklahoma. So that all comes with expectations and a weight. I don't think Carson Wentz is going to feel it because I think he's going to ball out again. He's one of the elite quarterbacks, and I don't think his job is up for grabs, even if he does struggle again. But he's a loser just because, again, he clearly wasn't happy, as I said on the podcast a couple days ago when Roseman talked about his discussions with Wentz about this pick. Wentz clearly was not super happy about it. So he's a loser in that regard, and also, too, because this just comes with a bunch of unnecessary talk, you know, through the media, through fans, and he's already dealt with so much of that with Nick Foles, with the injuries, with all these narratives that have formed about him that are just so inaccurate. The fact that he's got to maybe go through that again. Again, he's not a loser because he's going to lose his job to Jalen Hurts, but he's a loser in the regard, and I keep hating calling Carson Wentz a loser. I feel dirty, and of course, I'm not calling him a loser. His stock, let's say, is just lower after the 2020 draft in a way. Again, I also said it went up in other ways, but with the Jalen Hurts pick, it brings a lot of the same annoying stuff that he and we have had to deal with over the last 3 years. A couple more losers here as we wrap up the show. Wide receiver J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. The Eagles didn't do enough to fully replace J.J. after just 1 year since he was a second-round pick, but they bring in Jalen Reagor in the first round. If Arcega-Whiteside is 1,000 yards last year, do they do that? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe not. They clearly would consider other positions way more. I thought this year there was no doubt they were taking a receiver with that first pick. They also bring in Marquise Goodwin. They bring in John Hightower. They bring in Quez Watkins. So that's four new wide receivers on top of DeSean Jackson getting back healthy, on top of Greg Ward, you know, through four games down the stretch last year, balling out and being on a 1,000-yard pace. And Alshon Jeffrey still lurking around the roster. I don't think he'll be a part of the plans this year, but he's still on the roster right now and how he keeps bringing up his name. On top of JJ's just terrible season, that makes him a loser. Again, I think they're going to give him all the opportunities in the world to be that third receiver behind DeSean Jackson and Jalen Reagor. But again, you can blame Carson Walsh last year, and I think Walsh was a huge part of it. But my God, I've never seen a rookie. There's been some brutal route runners as rookie wide receivers, but holy cow, it was so cringeworthy to watch JJ, how slow he was coming in and out of his breaks, you know, trying to set up corners. The drops were brutal. I mean, there were so many bad reps. Yeah, he made some splash plays, but at the same time, you know, against the Cowboys a couple times, against the Dolphins, against the Seahawks, he made some good grabs, but and against the Giants on Monday Night Football, but it was bad tape. And the Eagles, they're not going all in on JJ this year. Yeah, again, they're going to try to see through his development, and I'm not going to say he's dead in the water already. It would be unfair to do that after just one tough year. But it's not looking good for him, and he's got a lot of competition now to win that job. He is not set in stone as a starter next year. If you told me Greg Ward was the starter, I wouldn't bat an eye based on JJ's performances last year. If you told me Marquise Goodwin was the starter instead, or even, God forbid, Hightower or Quez Watkins shine in the summer and eventually get to that point, I wouldn't be surprised at all. He's got a lot of competition now. So Arcega Whiteside certainly already was a loser just based on his 2019 tape. And now the Eagles, they added reinforcements in case he bombs out again. Final loser here on Locked On Eagles post-NFL draft edition, Nate Geary. I think the team really likes Nate Geary. I think Jim Schwartz loves Nate Geary. He'll probably be someone that plays most of the snaps a linebacker, but I think, you know, that bet was probably safer before the draft because you signed Jatavis Brown. Howie Roseman keeps talking about TJ Edwards, keeps talking him up. I really liked what I saw from Edwards, not only on defense last year, but on special teams. And then you spend a third-round pick on Davian Taylor. A ton of upside there. Raw speed, explosiveness, abilities, and man coverage. Eventually, especially with what I think the Eagles want to do on defense and what modern-day defenses are going to in the NFL, I know Geary has a safety background, but I think Jatavis Brown and Davian Taylor are just going to be better versions of Geary, and I think they're much better tacklers. Jatavis Brown struggled in tackling as well, like Geary, but he has so much more ferocity, so much more intensity and power, and more discipline. Like, Brown is not very disciplined, and Taylor is extremely raw in all these areas, but I think they're both a step up from Nate Geary. And you also add TJ Edwards and base packages on first and second down, you know, short yardage situations. Nate Geary will probably play a lot early on in the season, but I wouldn't rule out him not being a starter in 2020. I don't want him to be a starter. If their defensive coordinator was different this year, I would say there's a better chance. But considering what they added this offseason, I wouldn't rule it out. I think he does not come out as a winner after the 2020 NFL draft. All right, that's going to do it for today's edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast to get 4 to 6 episodes a week downloaded into your phone on any podcast platform or at LockedOnEagles.com. The conversation always continues on Twitter at DiBiase, L-O-E. And if you guys could, you've done such a good job of leaving us positive feedback on the show through reviews, podcast reviews on the app that you listen to. That's how we grow the show and we can continue to post and churn out so much content for you. Even through the dead zone. So if you guys could leave us hopefully a 5-star rate and a review, that'll really go a long way for us. So we appreciate the ones that have done that. And if you could, that would really help us out a lot. Louis DiBiase here signing off as always on Locked On Eagles. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. And let's go Birds.